It's McCowan, it's Shannon on a Monday after a busy weekend with a variety of sporting things going on.
Penalty kicks. Penalty kicks.
We're going to get to penalty kicks. Oh, we're going to get to another major championship for Djokovic. But the All-Star game in baseball is at hand, which really isn't that big a deal. But we're going to talk a little bit about where the game is, where the Blue Jays are at the break. It is the traditional time to provide some level of insight and or analysis, which we may not be capable of providing either of, but our guest is. Shai Davidi will join us after these messages. Well, as mentioned off the top, the All-Star break is upon us, a time to reflect on the first half. And in the case of the Toronto Blue Jays, it was significant enough the first half to ponder what will happen in the second half. And as we get closer to the trade deadline, Shai Davidi joins us from Denver, Colorado, where the All-Star game will be played. You didn't have to change your reservations from Atlanta, I assume.
No, I mean, we just made the decision once the new government regulations take into effect. So this has all been a little bit last minute, but it's been nice to sort of parachute into the life that we once lived.
So back to normal is in a discussion. I mean, things might be close to being back to normal.
Well, I don't know. I think there's still a lot of pieces moving, obviously, back home, but over here, I mean, COVID doesn't exist, apparently. It's you walk around with a mask, people look at you as if you got two heads. So it's been a bit jarring for a Canadian just rehatched into the wild. It's interesting because it's 180 degrees opposed to what we got.
So as we go to this All-Star game, as I mentioned off the top, it's a time where we all kind of reflect on where everybody is. Everybody has individual needs they might be looking for at the trade deadline. Some teams are acquiring, some teams are dumping. The Blue Jays are sort of in that middle ground where they kind of have to make some kind of a decision. Now we know what the decision is going to be. They're not going to dump. They're going to add if they do anything. Look, I suppose the only question in my mind is, would they even contemplate looking for a third baseman rather than pitching? Because pitching is going to be the most expensive and highly sought after commodity, as it always is at this time of year, Shai.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think they've been keeping an eye out on the third base market since the offseason. Right. Well, you know, once they made the decision with Marcus Semien, and, you know, Marcus Semien was going to play second base, that left third base open. And, you know, there was the idea, OK, maybe Vladimir Guerrero Jr. gets some reps there. But, you know, he's taken so well to first base, you know, nobody's stupid enough to mess with that at this point. So you've got Kevin Biggio, who is OK there, but you don't want him there on a full time basis, ideally. And I think they've been exploring steadily. Like in the offseason, we know that they had some interest in Justin Turner. They talked to the Cubs about Chris Bryant. I don't know this for a fact, but I believe they've at least inquired and checked in on Kyle Seager, who I believe recently got his 10-5 right. So now he controls any trade process there from Seattle. So, you know, this is something that they've kept an eye on. You know, I think the Pirates may have some opportunities for them. There are going to be options out there, but I think if you're the Blue Jays right now, you're weighing how much are you willing to pay for a rental versus, okay, if I can get someone with some control and it's a piece for beyond this year, it's a bit of a different conversation.
How attractive is Toronto to some of these veteran players?
I mean, who knows? If it's Toronto, I mean, it's probably a little bit more attractive. If it's Buffalo, it's a little bit less attractive. I think, like, from a club's perspective, look, the talent is undeniable. I think you can very easily look at the Blue Jays first half, pick out 10 to 12 games that, you know, with some more capable relief work or a little bit more capable defense, they win, you know. And if you split those, if they just pick up half of those games, because, you know, you're not going to win everyone, they're right there in the conversation right now. So this is definitely a team that its results have been somewhat less than the sum of its parts. You know, I think we're all pretty clear on the reasons behind that. And, you know, I think if you're coming here, I think it's a great opportunity. The issue is, you know, like what's the longer term outlook here? And I think that's where the Blue Jays are at. They would love to do some of their offseason work, get a head start on it right now, leading into the trade deadline.
Not to get away from the trade stuff, but we got a, for many, got a first look, however briefly, at Austin Martin, the high draft choice from a couple of years ago. I think he was fifth overall. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Who is a shortstop, intriguingly, with a good bat. The Blue Jays have a shortstop with a good bat, which almost invariably means one of the two of them is going to change positions. I know it's like looking into a crystal ball to try and project what's going to happen here, but they haven't put Martin at third base, or they haven't tried him at second base. They haven't done anything with him. They've left him where he is for the time being. What do you think happens 2 years from now when Austin Martin's ready to burst upon the scene?
Well, he's also been playing some center field at AA New Hampshire. He's sort of been splitting his time between those two positions. And, you know, I think that could very well be a landing spot for him. You know, all things being equal, you know, George Springer isn't going to be in center field for the duration of his contract. At some point, you're going to need a transition out of there. You know, if Austin Martin takes to that position, and, you know, from what I heard from the coaches at Dublin, New Hampshire, that he's completely comfortable out there, makes the plays that he needs to make and can go get the ball. You know, I think that's obviously one entrance point for him. But I think the Blue Jays are trying to create multiple pathways for him. And so, you know, if he's at shortstop, it's not a major transition to move over to third base. It's not a major transition to move over second. If you can play shortstop, you can play anywhere. And Austin Martin played some third base in college. So I think that, you know, the position conversation is, I think it's sort of, you know, putting the cart before the horse a little bit. You know, he's got some adjustments that he's making right now offensively at the double A level. He's acclimating the pro game. You know, I think his timeline is, you know, definitely into 2022 at some point, maybe towards the latter part of that. And, you know, the need at that point, you know, who knows, you know, maybe the Blue Jays sign one of the big free agent shortstops and, you know, the infield's all bottled up, or, you know, maybe they don't. And, you know, they need a third baseman again that come next year. So I think that there are a number of different pathways that this can take. But, you know, the way that the Blue Jays have set him up right now is that he's got two clear routes that he can take. And each one of them gives him some flexibility.
Neither Biggio nor Bichette have distinguished themselves defensively as infielders. I think that's the most honest and flattering thing we can say. Where is this guy ranked defensively as an infielder? Is he project as an upgrade over either of these two?
I think what we'll see relative to Biggio, I think right now Bichette is clearly better. And, you know, it's been a weird first half for Bo Bichette. You know, my impression is that you see him and he makes tough plays well, like when he doesn't have a lot of time and he's just reacting. And where you see some of his inconsistencies is a little bit in the routine plays where, you know, he's got the clock can start to slow down for him and he's got a little bit of time to think. That's where, you know, you see him almost aiming some balls and sort of misfiring. So I think that, you know, it's to me, I want to see Bichette get more runway at shortstop. You know, I think that there's still some upside there. I think he's the personality type is he's so determined to get better that he will, you know, and you think about sort of Marcus Simeon's process and how long it took for him to become, you know, such a strong defender at shortstop. And, you know, that was because the Oakland Athletics kept running him out there. And, you know, I think if the Blue Jays are going to commit to Bo Bichette, they've got to give him a similar runway and they very well could end up with a similar result.
Shai, of all the names that played for the Jays the first half of the season, I think so many people were interested in what Alex Manoah did for this roster. What have we learned in the first half about Manoah that will help this team the rest of the way?
You know, he's a lot guttier a kid than we might have known. And I'll say that there are a couple outings that stick out to me, and they weren't his most dominant outings, right? Like the performance against the Chicago White Sox, he was clearly battling it against a very tough lineup, one of the best offensive teams in the American League. And he didn't relent. He didn't wilt, and he found ways to keep the Blue Jays in that game. And I think about his start on Friday night, where again, you know, he wasn't completely sharp, and he didn't end up getting deep into the game, but he kept things under control. He overcame a couple of defensive miscues behind him, and he really, really pitched his butt off. And I think that sort of resilience from a young starter just debuting in the majors, I think that's a good sign, right? This is someone who's in control on the mound, who doesn't let things get away. Obviously, the Orioles start that ended in the hit batsman that led to the suspension was, you know, a sign of immaturity and the growth that still has to occur. But to me, I see enough guts there that, you know, this guy's going to find a way to contribute. And, you know, if the Blue Jays do end up acquiring another starter, maybe he's in your bullpen. He resolves your closer issues for the rest of the season, or maybe not. Maybe you just keep running him up there in the rotation and, you know, he keeps growing and developing. But, you know, I think, you know, of all the integration that the Blue Jays have made, I think this has been one where, you know, really could have gone either way and has really broken in their favor.
Well, they're going to have to watch his innings pitched. And they're probably already starting to think about that. And an option would be to put him in the bullpen, maybe as a closer. But then again, the reality of that is that when you're in the bullpen, you get up and throw hard with some regularity. No, you're not pitching in games, but we look at, you know, the statistics of how many pitches a guy throws during the game. We don't look at how many he throws in the bullpen. So do you have a personal sentiment as to whether you think Manoa, I mean, do you skip a bunch of starts? Do you stretch him out over 6 or 7 days, or do you put him in the bullpen? Is there a philosophy that you subscribe to?
Well, you know, I think that it was interesting what the Blue Jays did in, 2014 and, you know, similar, but for different reasons in 2015 with Aaron Sanchez, where, you know, he came up as a starter both times. And then, well, in 2014, he had been a starter in the minors and he came up as a reliever right away and finished the season that way, a couple months. 2015, he began the year as a starter, got injured. And then when he returned, he ended up in the bullpen again. But, you know, that could potentially be a bit of a model. But the innings thing to me is really interesting because, you know, the Blue Jays are looking at it that, you know, he's got a pretty good base from his college days. And it's really a one-year interruption that you're looking at last year. And so what's a reasonable number of innings for him? You know, can he get to 140, 150 this year? You know, that may not necessarily be out of reach for a guy who's been in, you know, 100 plus on multiple occasions already. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays have some runway on that. And look, I think the technology that they're using now, the different tests that they can do to gauge a player's recovery and the wear and tear, you know, gives them a little bit more latitude. You know, pitching for sure, inexact science, there's still a lot of guesswork that goes into it. But, you know, I think that they can track it and see if there's damage being done there. And as long as it's, you know, the objective data says that it's not, there's no harm being done, then, you know, maybe just keep running them out there and see where it takes you.
Is there a magic number in innings?
You know, I don't think so. You know, again, you know, I look at Aaron Sanchez in 2016 and everyone was like, oh, you know, he's never been above 110 and all that stuff. And he ended up crossing the 200 threshold, right? And it wasn't arm issues that got him the next year. It was blister issues and finger issues that ended up, you know, interrupting his progress. So, you know, I don't think the Blue Jays are going to put a hard cap on that. I think they're going to get to a point where they're going to have to play it sort of start by start almost, making assessments of sort of how far they're going to go with them. But, you know, if he's good and they're competing and they need him, you know, at a certain point, you know, you got to let it ride and see where it takes you.
So they have five starting pitchers that have been sort of in the rotation off and on for quite a while. And I get the sense that they're okay with it, but not totally satisfied with it. If there's an uptick, if they find somebody who they perceive to be better, somebody has to go. Or more, maybe more interestingly, if one of these five goes down, who's six in the rotation? Who's the sixth starting pitcher that jumps in right now? Because I don't know who that is. Could be any one of five guys, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it could be Anthony Kay right now, who has had some, you know, starts in the rotation. And, you know, he's sort of tantalizing, right? There are times you look at it and say, man, this should really add up into a pretty good package, and then it's not there, but then he shows flashes and you're like, okay, maybe he's figuring it out. So, you know, I think he's certainly an option. Thomas Hatch continues to start at AAA Buffalo, and one of the reasons the Blue Jays haven't called him up and thrown him into the bullpen is for precisely the reason you just mentioned there, Bob.
Well, they want him to start, right?
And they also need somebody to, just in case things go wrong or there's a need. So, you know, I think those are a couple of names right off the bat. You know, you can go down the ladder a little bit. TJ Zoik, who was up earlier, is starting and healthy at AAA Buffalo. But yeah, I mean, it's not amazing, right? It's you've got some questions in terms of who jumps in and what kind of job they're going to be able to do for you. So it's got to be a bit of an uncomfortable feeling, which is one of the reasons why I think the Blue Jays would love to add a starter. Whether they get there or not, you know, that's a whole other discussion.
Speaking of when things go wrong, what's the latest on Nate Pearson?
Yeah, he's still getting, they're still making decisions on what the next steps are for him after he had the issues with the groin. It's, if you're the Blue Jays, that is, it's a dagger in a number of different ways, right? Because one, you needed him up and contributing. You needed him building up his innings count, and you need him making some sort of progress, because he's just had so many injury interrupted seasons. So it's you know, I mentioned the word tantalizing earlier. You know, he's absolutely tantalizing, right? You're just like, man, there it is, the ace dominant force that we need, and it just hasn't been able to happen yet. And you know, for his sake, you know, he's been through a lot already. You know, you really hope he's able to find a way to get healthy and just, you know, enjoy his career just pitching without having to, you know, worry about injuries constantly. But this has been a really difficult year. And I think whatever timeline you're going to assign to him now, you know, it's tough to see him coming back as a starter.
Let's take a quick break. Shai Davidi is with us. We'll come back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is with us from Denver, where he's covering, actually Guth covering the Major League Baseball.
Wow. That's, I don't know. How does that work? What do you
while,
do?
Huh?
What do you do, Shai? I mean, do you like go to the ballpark and everything?
I actually, so I had a one-on-one interview in person with Austin Martin. It was the first time I had spoken in person to an athlete since last spring training. So it was really nice to just have a regular conversation. And you know, the two dose world is a great one. If anybody listening hasn't gotten their vaccine yet, go get it. It's really what we all need to be doing to get back to normal. But it's incredible. You know, it's just watching a ball game. You know, I got excited seeing a simple 4-3. And being able to watch the entire infield rotate to make the play, as opposed to just seeing the ball go to the second baseman.
At the beginning of this season, much of baseball was talking about Guerrero and his accomplishments and what he was doing, the home runs, the batting average, the RBIs, blah, 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 blah. Tatis was always a part of that conversation, but he plays in the National League. So it was sort of a one versus the other. And then all of a sudden people kind of looked up and said, and then there's this Ohtani guy. And he has, I mean, he sort of has an unfair advantage, not just because he's really good. It's because he's really good at two things and nobody else is doing two things. I mean, I don't see any way Guerrero. What can Guerrero do to win the MVP in the American League?
I mean, Ohtani would just have to fall off a cliff.
Well,
right?
Literally, yeah.
I mean, but what, he's an all-star at two positions. I mean, it's so unprecedented, and it's so incredible. And look, I mean, if Ohtani was just hitting, you know, he'd probably still be the favorite to win the MVP, right? Or he'd be right there neck and neck with Vladdy, and it's a coin.
Yeah, it'd be an argument at least, but there'd be a chance for Guerrero in the second half if he played better. Now, I don't know how that happens.
Right, but so, you know, whatever calibration that you're, however you want to calculate, I mean, you've got one guy doing the work of two all-stars. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just so beyond our comprehension. You know, legitimately the only comp that you can go back to is Babe Ruth in the early 1900s. Like that's, and it's a completely different game. It's a much more physical, much more demanding game right now. And, you know, I mean, who throws a pitch at 100 miles an hour and then hits a homer at 100 miles an hour in the bottom half of the inning, right? So, you know, that, and by no means should that take away what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is doing, because, you know, he's on track for one of the best, and possibly could end up having the best offensive season ever by a Blue Jays player, right? And, you know, right there with Donaldson in 2015 and, you know, Delgado 2003 and George Bell in 87, Jose Bautista and, you know, take your pick. You know, that's the kind of season that he's having. But, you know, Ohtani, this is just, it's unprecedented stuff, and it's just, it's freakish. And if he was in New York right now, in a major Eastern market, right, this guy would be an absolute legend. But a lot of what he does gets hidden away in the West Coast, and he's in the smaller of the two LA markets, which I think is partly why he chose Anaheim and sort of what he wanted a little bit. But that, you know, that piece is just, it's not getting the exposure and the recognition it deserves. For how incredible an accomplishment it is.
How much of a tarnish is on the year for either Guerrero or Ohtani if they don't make the playoffs?
You know, I think for the Blue Jays, I mean, like that's a meat grinder division, right? Like there are, you know, three, potentially four legitimate playoff teams in that division, right? You know, like I know that everyone's killing the Yankees right now, but that's still an amazing team. And if you put the Yankees in, you know, the junior varsity American League Central or something, you know, they're crushing it right now. You know, for the Angels, you know, losing Trout and have all the time that he's missed, that's certainly costly for them. But the Angels, it's a different issue, right? Like they've been pissing away Mike Trout's prime for several years now, or, you know, like half a decade, you know, and now they're going to start doing anything with Ohtani. It's even worse, right? So, you know, I think that the heat's on a little bit more in Anaheim. You know, I think from a Blue Jays perspective, this is the beginning of a competitive window. Right? If they don't make the playoffs this year, you know, they're still going to have high probabilities next year, the year after, and the year after, because the base of talent they're sitting on. You know, the Angels and, you know, former Blue Jays executive Perry Minasian, who took over there as GM this year. I mean, like, he's trying, but he's in a tough spot because, you know, they just don't have the depth of talent they need to support those two generational guys.
I think we all probably are in agreement with the notion that when we see great young baseball players at age, well, Little League age 12 or 13, 14, whatever, as often as not, they're pitchers. And as often as not, well, always, they're good hitters. And the fact that you might be a pitcher and the best hitter on your team is not actually a great shock, because the best athlete usually can do both. So Bill Shaken of the LA Times was on with us on Friday, and we got into this conversation where we addressed, well, now that Ohtani's been given this opportunity and succeeded at it, are other organizations, or maybe more accurately, will baseball in general allow young players who are good at both disciplines to pursue both disciplines simultaneously? What do you think?
So I think, like, there are a few guys who are going to get a chance. Like, Brendan McKay in the Rays system right now, you know, that he's got that potential. I think the way that the sport is right now with specialization at younger and younger levels and the physical demands on the pitcher, especially in this sort of max effort time where, you know, every pitch is everything you've got, it's going to take a special individual who's willing to put himself through the physical torture that it's going to require to do both. Right. And just, you know, not a lot of guys are built physically like Otani, and not a lot of guys are built mentally like him too. Like he is a robot, right? He is just completely 1,000,000% dedicated to baseball, and he wants this more than anything. And like, you know, everybody in the game is an uber competitor, but it's hard to get a guy who's that dedicated to it.
I'm not arguing with you in any way, shape, or form, but
I don't know. I think
here's the point, Shai, at least in my mind. If Otani had grown up in the U.S. or for that matter in Canada,
they would have screwed him up.
They would have screwed him up. They would not have allowed him to do what he is doing. The fact that he was in Japan, and I don't know culturally what the specific difference is, that's why he's doing it. And you're talking about other guys, but really what we're talking about is a system that doesn't think players like Otani should be doing what he's doing, or should be other players should be allowed to even pursue it.
So I don't disagree with that, but I think that, so in the case of an Otani, I think he's so talented that everybody will bend to accommodate him because like, okay, you want to do this? You come play on our team, do whatever the hell you want because you're amazing, right? And so if you're that talented, you're going to be able to drive those opportunities and you're going to force people, like you're going to make people say no to you because they won't pick one or the other. And a lot of people won't do that. But you know, how many guys are talented enough to try and force the issue, right? Like, you know, think about like Adam Loewen, who was, you know, who played in the major leagues as both a pitcher and a
hitter. Him well. Yep.
And you know, like he made a decision and he didn't want to do both at the same time. He was willing to specialize. And then, you know, when pitching didn't work out for him because he kept on having health issues, and he went back in the minors and rebuilt himself as a position player and then came out that way. But, you know, I don't think that he would have wanted to pursue both at the same time. And he certainly wasn't pushing towards that. And I think that's what happens for the guys who are talented enough. But, you know, I still think we're talking about a really, really small handful of players. You know, now, could we develop guys to come up this way from youth? Maybe. Would that be healthier in terms of pitching? You know, I think, you know, the new pitching rules in minor baseball in Ontario this year, where, you know, there are strict pitch limits on how many pitches kids can throw. And everybody on the team essentially has to pitch now in order for teams to be able to get through their seasons and to get through tournaments. And, you know, that was done with health in mind, but maybe those rules lead to more players developing as pitchers or staying in as two-way players a little bit longer. And that helps in that way down the road. But you know, the physical demands are just so high. Like you're playing two positions, right? Like how many two-way football players do we see? You know,
not anymore.
It's just too much of a physical burden to put on guys. So, you know, even if you put in a system, Bob, that was designed to help elevate that and to create those opportunities, I still don't think that you're still going to have enough players to that are going to be candidates for it, because it's such a, you're talking about such a unicorn of talent.
See, the interesting thing for me is that when you think of the amount of money that Major League Baseball teams need to invest in prospects, it would be such a risk to invest that kind of money and then say, well, he flopped at both, or was it worth the money? This, to me, with the cultural side of what baseball means in Japan, this is going to be something that the Japanese Baseball League works on and becomes, that's where this type of player will always develop. Not that there's going to be a lot of them, Shai, but there's going to be one every once in a while, because of the pressure of I want to be the next Otani. And then Major League Baseball teams won't have had to worry about spending the money until they know when they have to pay the Japanese league, until they know that the player is good enough to do it. So it's the get rid of all the risks, and I'm all for it. And I think that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the Japanese schedule is a little bit more conducive to it too, because it's not the same, quite the same everyday grind of the Major League Baseball schedule. They're more
right. It's a weekend thing,
right? So I mean, that certainly helps. But you know, what I think could happen is that, you know, teams who draft, you know, that high school kid who has that ability, who could really go either way, you know, maybe they let them come into the system and say, you know what, do both until you exhaust one or the other, right? Like when the Blue Jays drafted Dave Steeb, for instance, right? They wanted him as
an outfielder,
and they wanted him as a pitcher. And he said, look, I'm not signing. I'm an outfielder. And they said, you know what? Come to the system, do both. And if you don't make it as an outfielder, you're just going to keep pitching. And he said, fine. And, you know, he hit like $1 something as an outfielder, and he was shoving on the mound, and he quickly realized, okay, this is my pathway. And so why not let more kids kind of hang in there a little bit longer and not force them to make a decision, you know, the day they sign to enter.
Well, that's my entire point. And it's not just at the major league level. It's long before that.
Absolutely.
Because, there, you know, in high school baseball, they're tunneling kids to go to do one or the other. And the best athletes that you have in baseball should be allowed to explore a variety of things. It's one of the reasons why the best athlete at the high school level isn't usually the baseball player. He's usually selecting something else. He's selecting football or he's selecting basketball, more likely than baseball these days. But
yeah. And the other thing is that the U.S. college system is not really trying to invest in these types of players either, are they? I mean, they want to put kids on scholarships to win the College World Series.
Yeah, and just on the flip side, you know, the other end of it is that, you know, players want to specialize too, right? Because if you're getting buzz as one over the other, like, you know, and you can get yourself in a first, second, third round, like there's significant money to be made and a bonus there, right? Like, you know, these kids want to get paid, understandably so, and they're going to follow the track that's going to pay them the as quickly as possible. So, you know, and I don't begrudge kids for doing that. I think it makes sense, right? If you got an opportunity, if a team loves you as a hitter, you're dedicated to pitching, but they're going to give you a 7-figure signing bonus to sign as a hitter. It's like, okay, you know, it's like, where's it? Give me the pen, you know, let's go.
We're going to let you get out of here. We know you got
to. Oh, actually, one more quick question. Jay's in the draft. What did we learn? Anything?
Gunnar Hoglund, really interesting pick, trending into the top 10, blew out his elbow. There's a bit of risk there. But the Blue Jays don't get this talent at 19 if he's healthy. So it's an interesting play. Someone who could advance, has a high probability of sticking as a starter because he's got plus command. You know, Baseball America on the 2080 scouting scale gave his control and command a 70. He's got a low 90s fastball. The Blue Jays think that they like his slider. They think they can add another pitch there. So, you know, the trajectory is pushed back a year, but it's a really interesting draft pick. You know, a bit of a risk for them because he's coming off the, I think he's 6 or 7 weeks post TJ right now, but you know, it's an interesting value play. So you know, this you know, the front office has sort of at times been criticized for being very conservative, but there's some aggressiveness in this pick.
We will let you off. We thank you as always for your time, and behave in Denver. Remember, you're representing an entire nation. Okay.
Right, I'll do my best.
Thank you. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. We'll be back after these messages. And we're back. And our thanks again to Shai Davidi for joining us. Mentioned off the top, a lot of things to talk about. I guess we should start with the footy, the Euro Championship, Italy versus England. So the Brits go out and score in the first couple of minutes. Yeah. And I actually watched this game.
What?
It was, well, not all of it, I confess, but I was never so bored in my life. I spent the whole second half wondering what motivates people to watch this stuff. It was like observing paint drying. Nothing was happening.
But that's exactly what the Italians wanted to happen.
Well, but the Brits didn't know anything about it either.
No, they were ahead. So, for all of it,
for a long time, it was 1-1.
Yeah, no, but we had Sherman on last week, and we talked about the rope-a-dope, and he said he fully expected the Italians to do the rope-a-dope again, and they did.
Well, they did once it got to 1-1, and then overtime. See, here's the other thing. I mean, I know what the answer is going to be. I think overtime in soccer, first of all, it shouldn't be endless. This is the last game of this tournament. When are these guys playing again? Are they going to go back to their regular?
Well, they go to their club teams, and they may play Wednesday, I think.
Well, the club team's going to have to, we'll have to do without them. Why not play till somebody scores? But don't make it a 30-minute thing. Make it sudden death.
But don't you remember when you and I were kids, Bob, what they used to do? They would play 3 days later in a replay game.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
I know the idea is that if you make it sudden death, neither team will take a chance and neither team will try and score.
Yeah. So in the end, I think the magic number is the magic answer is it's for television again. Television wants a finite end. Television wants and television wants a winner. And, you know, let's face it, the amount of money that this game and UEFA is able to glean off of television around the world, you better deliver. And that's exactly what I want
is a winner. I understand I'm not always going to be happy. I understand there's sometimes going to be controversy. Sometimes the team that wins doesn't play the best. I know all of the parameters.
You mean the human nature of sports?
But I want a winner, but I don't want a coin flip winner.
Yeah, no.
And that's what penalty kicks are. Now, were the penalty kicks intriguing? Yeah, because there were a couple of saves that were made and England had the lead and then couldn't score and Italy winds up winning.
Raheem Sterling.
Well, it was a goalpost. I think one of the Brits hit a goalpost.
Yeah.
So, but it's not, you know, it's no different than the penalty shot parade in hockey. They're smart enough, at least in the NHL, that when you get to the playoffs, when it really matters, the penalty shot thing, goodbye.
That's right.
We're not going to do that because they know it's a joke. They know it's not a reflection of anything. It's a gimmick. Soccer people have not discovered this.
Tell those people anything anyway, Bob.
Well, no, we already knew they were stupid because they sit down in front of their television sets for 2 hours and watch a bunch of nothing happen.
Didn't enjoy the event. I just loved the event. I really did. I watch
once in a blue moon, and I don't, because I'm stupid. I think, well, maybe this will be different. Maybe this time I actually will be entertained. No, I'm not.
Yeah, but you're a different cat.
Well, I'm happy to. I'd be happy to watch it if it was marginally more entertaining.
But you'd want it 5-4.
Well, I would like that. Wouldn't be bad.
that's not going to happen.
I would also like players, especially the Italian players, to stop with the "My God, I've been shot."
Wow.
The fake injury. It's just, do they actually think they're fooling people?
I tell you, I think the referees do, you know, they're a lot closer to it and they can see the distance between players when they pretend to be tackled. But I think the referees do a really good job of being able to manage it. And the only thing they don't do is laugh at the players at times.
I'd laugh at them and then I'd want a rule that says I as the referee have the option to kick him out of the game.
Well, either that or it's the classic thing. If somebody does something stupid in a hockey game, give them a 2-minute delay of game penalty. You know, you're wasting our time. So
anyway,
it is what it is. How about Jamal Djokovic? So
Yeah, I was rooting against him. I always root against him. I don't know why I don't like Djokovic. I respect his
talent. Boy, he's good.
He's extraordinarily talented.
Is this the end of an era, though? I mean, Federer's out in straight sets final.
No, because he only played two tournaments, I think, or one tournament before.
But the big three is not the big three anymore, Bob. I mean, Nadal, you know. They're getting old.
Yeah, so what's your point? Well, I mean, Djokovic is the youngest and the best of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nadal's as great a player as he is, of course, he is almost unbeatable on clay. He's good on other surfaces, but he's ridiculous on clay.
Yeah.
You take his French Open wins away, you know, he's not in the conversation as the greatest player. And I think Djokovic is making a case. I mean, I'm a Federer guy. I would have liked to see Federer be that guy, and he has been. But
been for a long, long time. Bob.
Can't argue. Djokovic is really good.
And what about Shapovalov? What did you think on Friday? I mean, that was a pretty good match, even though it was straight sets.
It was a good match. His ground game, he hits the ball so hard off the ground.
Yeah.
There was a long period of time, relatively speaking, where I thought Shapovalov was overrated and was never going to be a serious contender.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not so sure. I'm not ready to say yes, he could be a top five guy. But I'm not discounting the possibility. His game is growing.
He's got to stay healthy. That's the key, right?
Well, they all do, right?
Yeah, I know.
Kind of the whole thing.
Hey, did you see our old buddy, former podcast contributor, Pierre Maguire, got a new job?
No.
Pierre Maguire is now a senior vice president in hockey operations for the Ottawa Senators.
Really?
Yeah. They announced it on Monday morning. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Eugene hired him. Which leads me to think is, why didn't Eugene hire us?
Oh, no, I know why he didn't hire us.
Why?
I wouldn't hire us either.
Why would he? Why? Come on, you'd be good, Bob.
At what? At telling Melnick what to do?
Yes.
I've been doing that for years, and it hasn't worked.
It hasn't helped him either.
Why would you think if he wrote me a paycheck, it would make any difference?
Anyway, so Pierre Maguire is...
Well, good for him.
Out of the broadcast booth. Out of the broadcast booth in a front office. Ottawa Senators.
Well, I hope he got a nice long contract. Because one thing we know about Eugene, and we love him, but he does have a tendency to change his mind from time to time.
Well, as I have advised lots of my friends in the hockey world, negotiate your contract and negotiate the buyout.
Or don't have a buyout. Just make him eat the whole contract.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here. We'll come back tomorrow with something else. For all who watched or listened, we thank you. And we'll see you in 24 hours.